That wraps it up for another episode of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Miguel Gavilan Molina and Kevin Pina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. For previous episodes, go to kpfa.org or flashpoints.net. For questions or comments, email dennis@kpfa.org. Thank you for listening.
Tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Hi, I'm Andrew Geller, host of Unbroken Chain, music of the Grateful Dead and Friends, noon to 2, the third Saturday of every month. Throughout August, we're bringing you special episodes of our program to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the show. And KBOO is raising money for a new Studio Transmitter Link, or STL, to bring sound to listeners. Tune in Saturdays, noon to 2, and text GDAF to 44321 or go to kboo.fm/grateful to contribute to this one-time campaign. Thank you for your support for Grateful Dead and Friends and KBOO Community Radio.
Did you know that KBOO podcasts all our news and talk shows?
You can find the podcast on KBOO's website, kboo.fm, on Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Just search for your favorite show and hit subscribe to get all the latest episodes downloaded to your favorite device.
Or search for KBOO on iTunes, Google Play to get all the KBOO podcasts.
Welcome to Art Talk Bus Stop, a monthly youth-centered podcast about how artists do their work and make a living. I'm Nicole Cabrera.
I'm Ayanna Ross.
I'm Erica Thomas. And today we are really excited to have Kalima Abioto as our guest. Kalima, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and who you are?
Yeah, I am a... I guess multi-artist, filmmaker, poet, drummer, musician, person creating it, this world.
I just kind of wanted to kick off talking about some of your film and kind of starting off with that, since there's a lot that you've made. And for people who aren't familiar with sort of what production looks like and all that stuff, what is the process of creating either a project that's long or short? What does that look like?
Well, I think for me, it's been a... it depends on who I'm making the project for. If I'm making it for myself, then it's really, you know, taking the time to write and bring out those ideas from myself, or get inspiration, you know, just be open to getting inspiration and writing them out, and even creating little storyboards if we're talking about film, like, and then going through the process of really trying to bring it out into life, you know. But if I'm making it for someone else, then I think it starts with a conversation about what they're looking for, and then I'll go back and write and dig deeper into how I format the story, and then yeah, you just kind of go into your pre-production of planning, you know, getting the actors or the interviewees, and even before that, you might write a treatment, you know, the kind of who, what, when, where type of idea, and how the project is to be structured, And from there, then you go on to get the characters, or the actors and the interviewees, and yeah, equipment stuff. so yeah, it's a process. It's a process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I believe I watched one of your videos, and it was about an older lady who talked about her time kind of growing up in the 1950s. And there were some shots in there where they featured kind of her face, the side, her hands, and kind of just describing it for everyone. Just lots of different angles. I was curious, how do you plan out like shots like that and angles like that? And what are some things that you have to keep in mind when recording something like that?
Well, I guess, you know, you want things to be as dynamic as possible, especially when you're interviewing someone. sometimes, you know, you just may say, oh, I want like two cameras just to represent, you know, different sides of a person. You just want to get as much emotion as possible. And so, yeah, I think that's the key, you know. And then you see what angles represent like the most, can give you the most information, you know. And so yeah, you just kind of go from what feels and looks the most interesting.
I also wanted to ask a little bit more about one of your projects. I believe it was called Sight, which I thought was one of my favorites that I watched from you, about the little girls and like having all like this kind of magical aspect to it, or like we talked about it a little bit earlier, kind of very surreal. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, can you talk a little bit more about that piece and how it came to you, or how you worked it out to be the project that it came out to be?
Yeah. For like a couple of years before, I have just been thinking about, you know, just children with powers, you know, and like what that would be like. And now we are seeing more representation in film and movies and stuff like that. But like a short while ago, which wasn't a while ago, we weren't seeing that, you know? And so during that time, I was just like, yeah, like, you know, these you know, black children, these black girls with these powers, and what would they be using it for, you know? And so that's kind of how the story kind of came about, you know, just the basis of it. And you know, just talking with my sisters, I have like four sisters, so I know that played a big part in it, you know. And so, yeah, just talking about, you know, the magic of black girls, you know. And you know, yeah, so that was kind of the basis of it, you know. And even that project was kind of, it was, as you could tell, it was very experimental, and I wanted to kind of even build on the ideas even more. So yeah. And also my sister, she, I don't know if you guys know what like astral projection is, but it's like when you kind of leave your body, and when you go to sleep, you know. And it's usually not voluntary, it usually just like happens, you know. So that was also like to, you know, jump and go to different dimensions, that also like played into it. So yeah.
It's like he just left. Is he coming back? Does he still know I'm here? I see his paintings, or I remember his hair, and then I remember that he's not so far away. I remember he told me one day, he said, Olivia, I won't always be around to take care of you. So he told me how to read the cards so that I could ask for advice. I could read them, and they would help me. So I do. And now I just make my own. My grandfather owned this house. He left it to me.
I was going on a hike with my family, and we were taking a break. I went to a tree, but beside the path. On my way to the back of the tree, I hit a little plant, and I heard a little voice, and the voice kept saying stuff, and I would look around and I wouldn't see anything. Then it said, over here, and I noticed it was a plant. From then on, I've been able to do it. I've been able to go to parks, and instead of talk to the kids there, I usually talk to the plants. Stories. People who came before tell me the stories of people who lived off the ground and how trees and other plants used to be respected and how the world was much more peaceful. I believe in us. At first, I thought I was all alone in this. I thought I was the only one who could travel and change things in the real world. But then I met Olivia and Mia. We've been through things together. To travel, we call on them and we use our gifts. And there's more to come.
Ayana, do you have any questions? Just wanted to give you a little space.
I was kind of wondering how you kind of came to filmmaking, like, and making the projects that,
sure,
you know, you make.
In high school, there was this place called the Media Co-op. Well, before that, I had just been like super into movies and watching movies and,
yeah,
you know, just loved doing that. And it was my like escape, you know, my own world, you know. But, you know, I told my mom I was interested in making films. And yeah, I don't know how she found out about it, but there was this place called the Media Co-op back in Memphis, where I'm from. And it was basically this place that this man had created, like a community in the basement of this church. It was turned into like a theater, and there were like, you know, home video cameras you could use, and editing stations. And back then, like, you know, like, it costs a lot, you know, to have, like, a editing suite on a Mac. You know, those things were a bit more less common, you know?
Yeah.
So it was really, like, a blessing to come across that, you know? And so, yeah, I just started going there all the time, every day, almost, after school. And there were people, like, like, really, nobody was my age, except for another good friend of mine who I started making films with. So there were, like, a lot of older people. just a lot of characters. It was just a really great time, you know. It was really wonderful. So that's how I started making them, through the Media Co-op and through making them with another friend of mine.
Like, yeah. I also wanted to ask about how history plays a role in your art as well?
Mm-hmm, for sure. Yeah, it's a big part. It's a big part of, I think, what of my process, you know. Like, I'm kind of, you're like always thinking about, I mean, me as a Black woman, like, what does that mean, you know? Where, what voice am I speaking from, and what, like, how am I carrying, in a sense, like, my ancestors' voice forward, you know? And like, or my cultural heritage forward, you know? And I think it's important not to always think about that, because, you know, you wanna, you sometimes you need to say things that are not always like, you know, oh, historically about that, you know. But, you know, I think it is important to, like, for me anyways, to always come back to, I don't know, the sacrifices that, you know, Black people have made, you know, throughout this country and the world, through the sacrifices that women have made, you know. And so, yeah, just bringing those thoughts out into my work in some way, you know, is important. You know, it's not always necessary, you know, but it is important for me in my journey, you know.
Yeah, I can understand. Yeah,
that's a great question.
I ask because I was up very late last night because I was reading one of the articles about through Willamette Week, and like the title itself is like inspired by displacement in Portland. Black genius looks for alternatives to gentrification in Memphis. And I was like going down this rabbit hole, articles about gentrification in Portland and like the Albina area and how yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
You can't tell.
I love it.
All day. Looking like his mom.
Enjoy.
There is a void. There is lack. But I think that there, where there is a void, there is also opportunity. So get busy, Memphis. Get busy. Plant some gardens and water that fertile ground. Till that soil and teach and train and provide a platform so that everything you dream of, everything that you need, everything that you want to be, you've created that in such a place as this. So.
Morning light, silken dreams take flight as a dark.
Yeah, it's very real, you know. Yeah, because it helps you have context about, you know, what's going on today, you know. And even though, you know, when I first came here, I just felt, I was like, this place is weird, you know. Like, and not just weird in the way of like keep Portland weird, you know, which is like a saying that is around, but like there's something that's like unsaid here. There's something that is like, I feel like a ghost is here or something like that, you know. And at that time, I didn't really know, you know, just the fact that like Black people weren't it was illegal for Black people to be here up until the 20s, you know. And you know, about the sundown towns here in Oregon. And my sister, who actually has a project, it was called, it's still called the Black Portlanders, you know. She did a lot of research into that, and you know, that's when we found out those things, you know, because they hadn't really been talked about, you know. And and then, you know, of course, people in the Alberta area and on
I think it was William Street and all this, you know, all these folks have been economically pushed out of their areas, out of their neighborhoods. And so, you know, that was what I was feeling, you know, in terms of just the racism that was just kind of hidden or not talked about, you know, under this idea of like, you know, this is like a environmental metropolis or, you know, such and such. So anyways, like, long story short, I'm really glad you like did that research, and I think that's part of like the good thing about bringing history forward into current artworks is because it can help somebody else gain perspective about what has happened and the work that still needs to be done.
Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah, I'm great job. Great research. Yeah.
Ayana's always doing projects or is interested in projects that relate to history a lot. So that's
kind of awesome.
Yeah, a cool connection I saw between both of your work.
Very cool. Very cool. I'm looking forward to seeing some of your work. Yeah, yeah, all of y'all's definitely. Work for sure. Yeah.
Kalima, I have a question. Is it all right if I jump in, you two?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. Sure. You mentioned your family a couple of times, and I know your siblings, you have artistic siblings also who, you know,
yeah.
make work around town and also other places. Can you tell us what it's like or what it was like growing up in a family of artists?
My mother is an artist. You know, she's an attorney, kind of civil rights and criminal defense attorney in Mississippi. And my father, he's like a musician. He plays many different instruments, and he's a educator specializing in African music and culture. So those things, those ideas played heavily in our growing up, you know, about, you know, African history, about Black history, about activism, about, you know, creativity, you know, not only, you know, is my mother like a attorney, but I always say that attorneys are really just writers, you know. And so she's a writer, and also she does like food arts and home arts and crafts. So, you know, there were just always, you know, stories or, you know, crafts, music, you know, that was always around. And the importance of your heritage. Those things were always around. So, you know, and of course, having four sisters, you know, that energy, you know, of, you know, the female, you know, energy was there. So that's, I guess that's what it was like in a sense. You know, we were a bit sheltered to some degree. And so those things factored heavily into our growing up.
Do you feel that your siblings each have their own unique practice that doesn't intersect very much, or do you collaborate, or do you sort of feed off of each other's artistic energy?
Yeah, I think I'm always like inspired, you know, by them. And I think earlier on, you know, when we were in college and like we would do more collaboration. We collaborated on this project called The People Could Fly, you know, which is like a folk tale that was brought back by Virginia Hamilton, who was a children's author. It was like a myth about flying Africans. And so we would go travel to different places and like do these like documentations about Black people and their dreams. So we went, you know, throughout the U.S. We went to Africa. We went to Jamaica. We went to some different places, and we did this. So this was earlier on. Lately, we've all been kind of doing our own thing, but we're always in, like, close quarters. So it's like, it always intersects, and we're always inspired by one another. And, yeah, I know we're going to collaborate, but I guess we kind of collaborate just in life, so, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I am curious to know more about your poetry work. As someone who is familiar with, like, sort of all types of media, I think for me, writing and poetry is kind of my weakest link. So can you start off by telling us, like, to you, what is a poem, or, like, what makes a poet?
To me, anyone can be a poet, you know? Even if you don't necessarily write, you know, because if you can speak, you know, and I feel like poetry is just a form of expressing our deepest feelings and our soul, you know. It's a goal of mine to be more academic about it, you know, like, poem structures and all this, you know, but one way that I express it is I really perform it. I feel like I kind of perform it better than I fully write it, you know, because there are things you can do when you perform it. You can move your body, you can sing it, you can, you know, any little thing can go into almost that poem, and it can bring it to life. So yeah, that's how I would describe it. You know, I started writing when I was, like, in high school, because I actually started reading late, you know. I used to have a lot of difficulty, reading and doing math in school and different things. So I guess I came to writing a little bit late, I think that attributes to my idea that it doesn't matter, like, if you can write or whatever. If you're alive, then you can, you know, do poetry. And poetry, I feel like, is kind of life, you know, really. You know, it can be, like, how you live your life.
I think when you sent us audio specifically and a doc with some of your poems, and I can definitely attest to saying that, like, it's a completely different feeling when you're hearing someone perform versus reading them, because, like I said, like, poetry and writing and that kind of art form is not something that I normally listen to or write to, but you can hear the emotion and you can feel what you're trying to convey, and what you sent us, which I think this might be a good opportunity to add a little snippet of what you sent us.
By the water, celestial beings of dual nature, walking capers, gliding species, flying on air. Time has come. There is nothing. Everything is there. It's the water bears. I can see my reflection. Tears flowing, a new direction. I found my spirit right here by you. Water beings walking on air. Cars going into Blue Lagoon. Technology like we never knew. I see beyond the cracks of concrete blues. Trapped mice and rats. People smiling and laughing in despair. Got by somehow on a chicken wing and a prayer. We left it bound together. Fingertips charmed. I feel like heartbeat. The spirit has moved on. Homeless but made it yonder to the great beyond. Even with nothing, some will make a place for you that you can run. Like Night John, reading and writing, scribbling and scratching out meaning. Sometimes it's no physical thing that you can believe in. Still trying to see what happened. Ripping and running, putting love songs together, missing parts, life's tribulations, just because. Learning more than ever. Home in my own arms. Spirit moved on, soul lives on. Figuring out the meaning, nerves perking out the seams. Wounds can't help but bleed. It's still healing, but like I said, I found peace on water's edge with these water bears walking on water and air. A new technology I took and I granted. They teach me how to make a miracle sandwiches. Water out of bread, magic for the ham. Water bear, we got you. World peace was the only thing she said. Stroke victim dreams she couldn't tell in full sentences. Even when the Uzi spray, fight for freedom, turn none away. All can drink the water, all can walk on land, said the water bears. Some you can only find on the water's edge. Celestial beings of dual nature, walking capers, gliding species, flying on air. Time has come. There is nothing. Everything is there. Did you see them? Did you see them? Did you see the water bears?
I know you said that you've kind of been making like a shift from sort of your film work to kind of more poetry and writing. Can you tell us, like, or I don't even know if you know, but why has there suddenly become a shift from some of your film and slowly evolving into poetry?
Yeah, I guess I think that, yeah, I'm trying to figure out a way to talk about it. I think part of it is knowing.